Welcome back to The Gavel and the Gavel. It's me, Harry, at Windsor Auctions, and I'm joined by...
It's me, Simon, from Lime Bay Auctions down in lovely Devon. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well, mate. We're going to start with your week, because prior to recording, we were just having a catch-up, and you were caught up in storm. Is it got a name?
Nelson.
Nelson.
I think it's Nelson. Yeah, Nelson. I think they called this one Nelson. Storm Nelson. Yeah, me and Nelson, we're not getting on. We're not friends at all. Me and Storm Nelson are going to have words. I'm telling you right now. Mr. Storm Nelson on Thursday night. I think in previous episodes, I've probably mentioned our lovely beach hut down in lovely Seaton there on the promenade, full of paddle boards and a little kitchen and a kettle and all the rest of it. Well, Storm Nelson decided that wasn't happening this year. Storm Nelson decided to absolutely wipe out the esplanade of not all beach huts, but certainly mine. And I say mine, I mean the family beach hut. Yeah, Storm Nelson. I got a Facebook. No, I didn't, because I'm not on Facebook. Susie got a Facebook message saying, "How's your beach hut?" And we went, "What now?" And so we popped down there yesterday morning, which is literally the first day of the season. The beach huts have been put up. They've been winterized. They've been put away over winter because of, you know, storms and stuff, Harry. And then you get a two-week window where the barrier comes up and lorries are allowed down the esplanade and trucks. And you put up your beach hut in your allocated spot. And the last day to put them up was Thursday. So all the beach huts were up by close of play Thursday. The barrier went down and it was locked, and it was now a beautiful pedestrian area full of shishi beach huts, all beautifully painted and ready for the summer. Storm Nelson decided that wasn't happening. Storm Nelson has taken my beach hut. Not happy, Harry.
I know you're not happy. There are two things out of your description of what's just happened that are upsetting me. One, I'm sorry for your kids that the beach hut is now going to be replaced. But two, please don't tell me, where on earth did you learn the word shishi?
I don't know. I really don't know. So when I say...
Worryingly, that's the thing that I took out of that. I've heard it before, dear listener, and it's horrible when these sort of things happen. And I am obviously always recording these things with a smile on my face, but I am sorry that the beach chat's gone. But yeah, it's shishi, but there you go.
Shishi. By the way, when I say gone, I mean properly gone. I mean, I took the kids down and Pablo on first thing, and it was a windy, howling day on the Friday. And literally, we stood in front of our plot. Nothing there. And I mean nothing. Just a flat, wet piece of concrete. Nothing there. The paddle boards have gone. The paddles have gone. The kitchen's gone. And it wasn't just me. Poor people of Seaton. There was a lovely couple, bless them. And I tell you what, Seaton was lovely. Loads of people came down to Seaton Seafront to help with the big clear up and to help some of the elderly people who have got beach huts, who obviously are not physically able to lump big bits of stuff around, and help them find some of their belongings, get them back to their car. And one poor couple, bless them, it's their first year of having a beach hut. They bought a brand new beach hut for their plot. They put it up on Thursday, and on Friday, it was smashed to pieces. And they look devastated, bless them. Lots of lovely people in Seaton helped them clear up, and they were trying to be quite stoic about it, but they were clearly upset. It was a shame, but interesting to see the human spirit as ever. People came down with shovels and with brooms and cleared all the pebbles off the esplanade and helped loads of people. I mean, literally all the beach huts. I mean, there must be, 50 to 100 of them. Every single one had been moved by the sea. So at one point, there were a load of beach huts on the west walk, and they had to start at beach hut one, move it 3 foot to the left to put it properly on its spot, then go to the next beach hut, move that one. That is the power of the sea. Incredible, incredible. It's been interesting, Harry. The joys of living in Devon.
Yeah,
do you know what? Yeah. It is one of those things. It's Mother Nature. You can't You can't fight Mother Nature. So, yeah. Any chance you've got a beach hut coming up in auction?
Weirdly, not big in Windsor, beach huts or Thameside huts or whatever it would have to be.
Oh, I could do a Thameside.
Yeah, yeah. This is off the back, dear listener, of Simon having an absolutely storming auction down in Devon on Monday of this week. We're recording this over the Easter weekend, where Emma, there is a segue coming here, my wife, came and helped. And we had a stonking auction. It was great fun. But Emma has asked me to regale you, Simon, with a story. And this is entitled, "When is the most inappropriate moment that somebody has chatted to you about auctions and your life as an auctioneer?"
Probably at a funeral.
Okay. Yeah, that was another one. That's not good. I have checked, dear listener, and Emma has asked me to tell you this story because she thought it was very funny. She was had an appointment this week after your sale with the doctors for what one would describe as an intimate examination.
Oh.
And the nurse took her to the examination room, and they're just setting up for the examination.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And as the examination begins, the nurse says to her, "I love coming to winter auctions. What have you got in this catalogue?"
No! Oh, poor Emma! Oh no!
Emma, who had not recognised the nurse because she was concentrating on the fact that she was at a doctor's during having a checkup, said the conversation wasn't exactly flowing at that point. She wasn't quite sure what to say. But ever the loyal Windsor Auctions director, she then got into, "Oh, what are you interested in? What have we got coming in? What have we taken up?" Also, when she came out of the year, she made a note, a voice note on her phone, which she sent to me. And all it is podcast content.
Can I just say, I mean, my fellow
It's above
director,
and beyond, frankly.
It's above and beyond. I mean, that is duty, the cause. Oh my, that is going that extra mile. How many other cliches can I trot out here? But seriously, in that position, I think we should leave that there. In that position, to still have the ability to pitch the business for sales. Great job, Emma. Great job. And by the way, Emma, I know you don't listen to this podcast, but anyway, neither of our wives listen to this podcast. That's the beauty of this podcast. We can say what we like because neither wives want to listen to this at all. But what I will say, Harry, is Emma was brilliant on the rostrum, on the Easy Live platform, taking huge amounts of live bids over the internet for us at Lime Bay on Monday. And it wasn't a short run, was it? It was cold for a start. And what did we do? 5 hours? 5 and a bit hours?
It was a while. I think it's how I described. When I was driving back that night, I was like, "Oh, that took longer than I thought."
Bit sleepy. Yeah, especially as now, let's put this in context. Emma has done little bits of taking live bids off the internet with one of the platforms. She has never, am I right in saying, Harry? Am I getting this right? I don't think she's ever done a full auction. It was 5 odd hours, and my goodness, she was on her mettle, not as much as at the doctor's by the sound of it, but she was on her mettle and did a fantastic job. And oh my word, the bids were flying in, weren't they? It was an incredible day.
It was a good day. Now, that leads me to my first whinge. I've got two big whinges. Strap
do you
in.
Save them up for this?
I do. Strap in. So I've got two big whinges, life of an auctioneer and the collections and all sorts of stuff. But life of the auctioneer, this is what the listener needs. So we drive back from Devon on Monday night and we have a big clearance over the course of the week. It's going to take 5 days in total of a house in Chelsea. And Emma is leading the team there because she wants to be on site. And she gets back from Devon late Monday night and is up and out of the house at 6 a.m. to be in Chelsea first thing in the morning with three lorries and a team of six guys, our removal squad, who are going to be clearing this house. And when we get there, they are lucky in this location. They have a triple garage But it's got double yellow lines outside of it. So you can drive in and drive out, but obviously there's no room for vans. So that's the scene. And when we get there, we've been there about an hour, and two of the lorries are, the backs are open, and we're loading very, very heavy furniture in. And traffic wardens come up and start chatting to the men. Okay. And then they put tickets on the vans. Okay.
What?
So they put tickets on the vans, having chatted to the man, what are you doing? Well, we're just pausing for a minute and loading this furniture. We've taken the car, the vans off the road. But you're parked straddling the double yellow lines because you're half on and half off their driveway, and we're going to give you tickets. How long are you going to be doing this job? We're going to be backwards and forwards for the next 3 days, okay? So we get these tickets, very annoying, it's expensive. It's £130 a van, or £65 if you pay quickly, okay? Next morning, vans arrive. Traffic warden is sat on a wall opposite, said, as they got out of the vans, he said, "You said you're here for 3 days. I'll see you every morning."
Well, he's a joy.
And had waited, had walked to the location, knowing that the men would be coming back to load up. Fortunately, some builders noticed that this is going on, and they said, "Well, we're just finishing our drop-off and have got a pay and display bay." So they move their lorries as they're leaving, and we park, much to the chagrin of, or whatever the word is, of the ticket guy, the traffic warden, who then loiters for an hour, realizing that we're going to pay for those 2 hours, load the vans, and then we're going to go. So you go, next morning, guess who's back?
No.
I have to tell you, it is no way in these tough times that people should be hunting small businesses in order to make a fee. And what we didn't want to tell him is that 50% of the items that we were collecting are being donated to charity by the owners of the property.
Wow.
So you're just trying to make a quick buck, get in the way. We're making sure that we're not blocking a highway. We're very, very careful of that. And we're just doing our best in tough times for everybody. So that's my first bleat whinge of the week. Just give it a break. And the men are attending the vans. They're trying to stay by the vans all the time to make sure that everybody's happy. The neighbours are coming to check on us, make sure we're all right. It's a lovely area. People are coming out. Oh, have you got tea? Have they got a kettle in there? If not, chaps, do you want a cup of tea? People were lovely, even though there's a cafe on the corner, you know, a coffee shop on the corner. People were just really, really lovely, apart from these people who literally...
And actually, what he's actually done, because those tickets will have to be offset against the sales, you've actually taken money out of a charitable donation. Well done.
It's very, miserable,
very
isn't it?
Proud of yourself. It is miserable. And you know what? That is the slight difference. And, you know, I've got to say, the counter to that is, I mean, down here in Devon, yeah, we have a similar situation where we're clearing a house. It's a terrace house. There's no parking. We've got to park on the double yellers. We do cause a little bit of chaos. But actually, we don't have any, the traffic wardens will come up and speak to the guys, and they will say, "Look, we're really sorry, but where?" And they're like, "No, we get it. You've got to, there's no other way to do it. It's either that, or you're trying to carry furniture across a main road, and that's dangerous. You know, you can't do that." We even had a traffic warden where we were in a particularly precarious property near some lights. Bless it, he went away and brought us back some cones and went, "What I'm going to do is just cone off this section so that when you get off the lorry, you're not stepping into traffic." And you know what? That is sad, Harry. I feel for the boys, and I feel for your client, and for, you know, Emma having to manage this with somebody.
Do you know what? After a while, we just gave up and said, "You're obviously going to do what you're going to do. We think it's unpleasant.
Sure.
We're not mucking about. We are rotating vans, getting vans out of the area, using the parking base, using the garage area." Any case. So I just want to say thanks so much for making our job that much harder. We weren't taking the mickey. We're doing our level best. Now, second rant, and this is something that I think at the moment is going to become more prevalent, and I'm calling on people to call it out as often as possible. And I don't know what the law is, but it feels to me like it's bordering on fraud or attempted theft. But let me tell you a story. A couple of auctions ago, we have a reasonably rare Luftwaffe World War II pilot's watch in a sale. And it sells at auction. Guy's gone through the registration process on one of the platforms. I think it's only fair to leave that platform anonymous out of the two that we use. And he goes through their registration process, which involves checking who they are and all the rest of it. And he bids on this watch and is the successful bidder. There are multiple bidders. The underbidder rings me 2 days later and says, I'm going to send you a link. I am a bit cross, but I know this is nothing to do with you. And the same watch is on eBay using our photos. Yeah, using our photos and being sold. And the asking price is less than the cost he'd paid for it at auction. Now, dear listener, most important part of this story is he doesn't have the watch at this point and has not paid for it. So the vendor on eBay who has bought it from us is not in possession of the watch. It is not his. He has not paid for it. He has not got it. So his handle on eBay is Piff, P-I-F-P-A-V, right? So we message him and say, oh, you haven't settled. We ring him, not via eBay, via our, you know, because we've got all his contact details. And we ring him and we say, this is a bit weird. You haven't paid for this. And we've now been shown it's being advertised using our photos and all the rest of it. Nothing back. We chase him. We go through our protocol. We email him, reminders of invoices and the rest of it. In this time, he sells the item on eBay.
For less than he's bought it from us?
For approximately the same price that he's bought it from us. But including fees and all the rest of it, he's made a loss. So he's now sold it. So somebody else thinks they are the buyer and owns this item, don't they? So in their minds, they own this item. Yeah, we've still got it. Yeah. It's in our strong room. It's locked up nice and safe because it's a reasonably valuable item and it's rare or set. I would say rare. And so we contact him again and we contact him again. We leave him messages. And my messages, to be fair, are getting slightly sarcastic along the lines of, I don't think this is on. You know, I'd say that you're trying to commit some sort of fraud here. So somebody else is then paying for this item, expecting it to be sent to them on eBay. So they've paid for it, haven't they?
Ah, of course.
We've still got it. So we ring our client, vendor.
That's the fraud.
I'm guessing. The vendor is hugely upset that we haven't collected the money and is annoyed with us because we haven't collected the money. We have explained to them that they're, you know, somebody's tried to perpetrate a fraud here and possibly try and steal the item or God knows what. We're not quite sure how one would describe it. So I'm talking around that particular part of the subject. And we put it into a subsequent sale, or sale you and I have just had, where the watch sells again to another collector. So the watch is now sold. That client pays for it immediately. And it's shipped in the usual fashion. So they now own it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's all sorted because the original buyer has never made contact with us, having tried to sell the item on eBay, having then sold the item on eBay, and I imagine not then been able to deliver that item because we've still got it to the person who's bought it. So we don't know what's gone on there. We are trying to get comment from eBay. That it's very difficult because obviously there's no contact. We're not sure how we've tried, but there's no contact there. That I think we've all got to be wary of in the auction world, that people are using.
Question.
Yes, from the floor.
Question. So when it was listed on eBay, was it listed as a buy now or was it an auctional, a live auction?
It was an auction.
So are we thinking, therefore, that what he's doing is he's listing it low, thinking, if it makes double, then I'll pay Windsor and I'll ship it and I'll make my profit that way. But if it just sells at the starting bid, I'll simply defraud the customer, take his money and renege on my deal so I win either way.
Well, I don't know what he's trying to achieve. It doesn't sound good, does it? I appreciate there's opportunities, but he is selling something he doesn't own and hasn't paid for.
Correct.
So he's and also he's using our photos. Now, what is interesting about this?
Well, they are very good photos.
Well, actually, and we will confess to this, one of the photos was meant to have been cancelled and meant to be deleted from our website because it wasn't very good. And there was a mark on the background. And that is how we caught him. So rather than have a row with our photographer, which is what I was going to do, go, why is this photo? I went, hang on a minute. Well done, you.
That's worked out well.
Because that mark is unique on the background. Yeah, and therefore, except that's how we caught it. It was so funny. And then we were able to match up the other photos. Yeah, so the gentleman, Piff Pav, based in the Isle of Man, still at large. Still going up doing whatever it is he's doing. And hugely, hugely disappointing. So we are, we're gutted that that's happened. So that's two rants. Traffic wardens, be a bit more supportive. And also, I think the trade needs to look out a bit more for this sort of stuff going on. I'm sure we're not unique. I'm sure it's happened before and will happen again, but it's not funny. Obviously, the guy has now been barred from various platforms and all the rest of it, you know, by us.
Yeah, I bet. But not that difficult for him to set up again, or her, or whomever. I'll give you the counter to that, just to give some light and shade.
Yes.
I think I met one of my favoritist new customers from our previous auction. A lovely lady rocked up a couple of days after the auction and said, "I'd like to pay for and collect my item." It's the first time I've done an online auction. It was terribly exciting, she said. I had a lovely, lovely time. And she said, "But I must just explain something to you." And whilst we're doing this, I was actually going through the transaction. I said, "Oh, you've bought the opal and diamond ring." She said, "Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing it. I hope it's as good as it is in the pictures." I thought, a little bit of pressure. Went to the safe, brought the ring out, opened it up. She said, "Oh, it's even more lovely than I thought it would be from the pictures." I said, "Oh, that's great news." And bless her, she paid in the region of £1,600 for the ring, which is still a good price. You know, she was a smart lady. It was a beautiful ring. You remember the one?
Yeah.
Cushion cut opal surrounded by diamonds. Antique ring. She paid good money. She said, "See, the thing is, I'm in a little bit of trouble because I went onto your website looking for a bedside cabinet for my husband. And I've ended up spending £1,600 on an opal and diamond ring, and he's not best bit chuffed." And I said, "Do you know what, madam? You have just become this month's absolute VIP favourite customer. Anybody that browses our website looking for a bedside cupboard and bids on and wins a £1,600 opal and diamond ring, you are the girl for me. You have won the prize." She was absolutely lovely, bless her, and over the moon with her ring. I understand husband not quite so impressed. Still doesn't have a bedside cabinet, but his wife does have a beautiful opal and diamond ring. So she is my favourite customer of the month. She definitely wins the prize. She gets a rosette.
I suspect that your favourite customer of the month is not as remorseful as she would like everybody to believe that she's upset her husband by buying this, because she's dead chuffed that she's got the ring she wants.
Oh, she was super duper chuffed. But she said, "Isn't it funny how you can, you know, go to your catalogue looking for a bedside cupboard and come away with an opal and diamond ring." I said, "Yes, it's very funny. Keep doing it, madam. Month after month after month, if you wouldn't mind. Keep looking for that. We might have in fact, I'm going to make sure there are no bedsides in the next three auctions, just so this lovely lady can spend as much as she possibly can on our jewellery."
Oh, I was about to say, she didn't buy a bedside. That was my supplementary question.
No. And there will be no bedsides in the next three auctions, just to make sure that she keeps her jewellery shopping habit going. We did have a bit of fun, didn't we, on the rostrum? Bearing in mind, again, just to repeat, it was Emma's first live auction on the rostrum with thee and me, where we managed to we were so on fire, Harry, that we blew all the electrics, didn't we?
Do you know what, I was waiting for you to bring it up because I didn't know whether you wanted to mention it or not, but I will regale our listener with the story just quickly, and then Simon will fill in the gaps, because I have learnt, after being in business with Simon for very many years, not moving and not speaking was my safest option at this point. We are flying during the auction. The sale rate was something like 92-93% on the day, which is high.
It was
huge attribute to the team at Lime Bay, who'd put together a great catalogue. And we're about, I think, 70-80 lots in, something like that.
Yeah.
We're powering through a lot of real high quality jewellery. And a fuse breaks or bursts or goes or whatever the phrase is.
Blows.
Blows, thank you. Ask me one on Georgian furniture. I might be able to help. Electrics, no chance. Which takes out all of our comms, platforms, and all the rest of it. I will tell you a supplementary story about this in a minute. Screens, the whole lot's gone. So there's a moment of panic, and I then take the executive decision that Simon knows what he's doing, and I'm just going to sit quietly on the rostrum and make conversation with a very busy and amicable room who are now going to need entertaining for about 10 minutes while we work out what's going on. So I do my best doing that. Simon and everybody else leap up. and they start running around and replacing things. And a lot of cables came out of lorries, vans and all this of it. And we had a sort of makeshift rewiring session gone on. And we were back up and running. Subsequent to this, Simon, and I haven't told you this, on our social media, we had numerous messages from buyers. So what we do, ladies and gentlemen, is buyers from both auction houses often bid at both auction houses, and we move the stuff around the country to save on postage for them. On the Windsor Auctions socials were messages, direct messages, not, you know, direct messages to me saying, oh, my screen's gone very quiet and isn't moving on. Is everything all right? I don't seem to be able to bid, and I really want to bid on this lot. And is what's happened to the, oh, is it all broken? What's going on? How they thought I was going to answer these while I'm actually sat on the rostrum meant to be doing my job. It was very funny. But yeah, so everybody's worried about Simon's kit. We got back up and running after a brief pause and a quick gulp of tea to calm the nerves. I think the Jelly Babies got opened early that day and we were back into the fray, weren't we not? But Simon, what a professional. Simon Asusi running around with extension cords is a sight to behold. Trying to smile and not swear was the biggest thing.
There was a point in time as we were trying to reroute and re-rig the electrics where there were cables everywhere. At one point, poor Emma looked like a Christmas tree with cables wrapped all around her like fairy lights. We were then sort of saying, okay, we think we can get this all back up and live if we avoid that fuse and do the, and run a cable from there, this, that. And we were up and down off the rostrum. And then we realised we got everything up and running, but the Harry was entwined in electric cable. So was Emma, and nobody could get anywhere in it. So we had to have a reconfigure then. It was fun, wasn't it? It was fun.
I mean,
and then of course you had, and then we had somebody from the audience say, "Have you tried switching it off and on?" You can be quiet for a start, sir. Right. It was a little bit stressful, but we got it all back up and running. And I'm delighted to say, it didn't seem to affect. As soon as we were back up and online, the bidders came back and we were flying again. But yeah, it was a squeaky moment.
There was a lot of help from the floor, wasn't there? There were a lot of people in that day, and Simon and I have, we've mentioned before, have different views on that. But Simon, even Simon cracked a bit this month down at Lime Bay, because we had such a gentle crowd who were good fun and were really up for a bit of banter, because auction houses can be feel a bit empty and drafty and all the rest of it. And they'd come to buy, which was great because it was a good sale, and they'd come to enjoy their day. But Emma, who hadn't been to Lime Bay for a while, what was funny is she walked past a man with a cooler bag and two flasks going up the stairs to this particular, we have a two-floor sale room at Lime Bay. And she said, "Oh, hi, how are you? Blah, blah, blah." He said, "Fine, settling in for the day. I can't wait," which was lucky because he needed a cooler bag and two flasks. We were there 5.5 hours. But yeah,
they were. You're absolutely right, Harry. They were a fabulous crowd on Monday. I have to say, there was a good bit of banter. There were seasoned professional bidders, buyers who, you know, they know their stuff. And there were new buyers in the room.
Yeah.
There were people actually from Seaton who had never been to an auction before, and they were joining in. It was fabulous. And we say it like we're on the rostrum for 5.5 hours, but we got to admit, Harry, it flies by, doesn't it? When you're having a great day like that, it flies by. And even the slight panicky moment of crashing out all the rostrum and the power out, it was still a fabulous day and a great team effort. I really enjoyed it. And I think on that note, I need to go and buy a beach hut, Harry. Can you lend me some money?
You do need to go and buy a beach hut. No.
Okay.
Dear listener, in order to keep boosting our auction income that Simon now needs, please like, subscribe, and review the podcast.
Desperately.
Be wary of traffic wardens. And that's the way forward. Mate, I will see you soon.
Look forward to it. Take care, buddy.
Cheers, pal.